This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, you're listening to The Property Show on The Morning Run. I'm Sim Wee Boon. Despite the current economic conditions as a result of the pandemic, the lowered interest rates from banks and an ongoing home ownership campaign, which ends in about 3 months, has spurred a renewed interest among Malaysians on whether they should take the leap and buy their first home. Yesterday, Roshan Karnison on Ringgit & Sense spoke to licensed financial planner Joyce Chua to discuss the financial aspects of buying your first home from a developer. Now, buying your first home from a developer can be a scary thing. There's a lot of terms and a lot of processes that you'll have to go through that might not be common knowledge. So for today's show, we'll be tackling some commonly used legal terms that you might encounter should you decide to buy your first home from a developer. Our guest is lawyer Chris Tan, managing partner of Chur Associates. Welcome to the show, Chris. Okay, we're just going to start with some terms that I've stumbled upon in the course of buying your first home. And maybe we can start off with this term, letter of intent to purchase. There might be some misconception to what exactly it is. And I've heard some people actually consider this as a booking fee. Can you just break it down for us in terms from the perspective of like buying your home from a developer? What is a letter of intent to purchase?
Okay, I would use the word that to say that, you know, as far as today's context, let's limit our discussion of buying from developer. And there's two types of property you can buy from developer. One type of property is called under construction, which means that you buy now, they are still constructing it, and in a few years' time, you'll get it delivered to you. Or the other one, it could be actually a ready stock by the developers from left behind from the previous project that are still ongoing. So in that sense, the second one will very much look like a sub-sale, subsequent sales. And the first part will be more like a regulated under the Housing Developer Act regime, right? So for the purpose of today's discussion, let's just focus a little bit more on the buying under the Housing Developer Act regime, which is what the HOC is targeting at the moment. Let's put it this way. Basically, when you buy under the HDA regime, it must be a residential property. It cannot be a commercial, right? And number two, that it is actually things that is under construction, which means that you can't get the key ready for you until unless a period later, 24 months or 36 months, depend on the type of property again. So let's then go back to the whole idea about the letter of intent to purchase and the booking and whatnot. Actually, under the Housing Development Act, there is no provision for developer to collect any booking fees in relation to this. It's true problem. Number one is that it's expected under the Housing Developer Act that when you pay 10% of your deposit, you are expected to sign the agreement prescribed under the Housing Development Act immediately, right? So there's no arrangement of part payment or deposit and whatnot. They will not count until it is signed, right? And obviously, recently, there is a case in the court that actually decided in this favor to say that if really they collect any booking from the purchaser, right, of the home, then the developer is expected to deliver the unit from the date of the payment of the so-called booking rather than the payment of the first 10% deposit as required under the law. So it will actually compromise the position of the developer in terms of have a shorter time to deliver the vacant possession of the unit. In that sense, what it means is that there is potential a chance of a claim with what we mean by liquidated, ascertained damages for the late delivery. So generally, if we talk about option to purchase in relation to buying from developer situation for under construction property, the answer is that it is actually quite illegal. It is not valid until it is the SPA proper is signed.
Does that mean that when it comes to looking at something like a booking fee, it's very important to clarify that what you're paying for and what you're getting is written down in black and white and they have them explain it clearly for you? I mean, what would you advise people to look out for when these terms come up?
I think generally it's very important to say that you know what you are buying, right? And whatever documentation that you're willing to do, actually, you can actually have an arrangement for that to be paid to a real estate agent or whatever that is in relation to securing a unit for you, right? But I'm just saying to you is that if it's just like you buying a car, you must know that what is the capacity of the car, what is the size, you know, what exactly did you buy, what is the price, what is the specification of the property, you know, things like that. So all these things need to be in and very clearly. And as, and one other thing that's also very important is that talk about when do you want to sign the agreement. I think the expectation between both the party need to be managed properly as well, which means that there's normally a column that say that, hey, within 2 weeks, parties must sign the sales and purchase agreement. And another thing that is very important is like, you know, whether this purchase is subject to you getting loan from the panel banker, and whether are you eligible and all this, would it be a condition for you not buying if you are not eligible for a bank? While we know that the current situation is very favorable in terms of bank interest, we also know that it is not easy to get a bank loan because then a lot of people income will be impacted this day because of the pandemic and whatnot. So I just say that, you know, it cut both ways. So pay attention to this detail to at least manage the expectation of both the parties.
Okay, moving on to another term that you will most likely stumble on, but is the sales and purchase agreement. And this is this is the main document that everyone will refer to, you know, if not the Bible of your process into buying your first home. Let's start off with like what do you have to look out for in your SMP? Because as we all know, the SMP is a huge piece of document. There's a lot of pages and a lot of writing there. So maybe you can highlight some parts that our listeners should look out for in their SMP.
Okay, so now we are dealing with we are talking about buying under construction from the housing developer. So which means if you are doing this type of whereby you pay the money, you wait a few years before it's delivered to you, this type of property, then you are looking at a prescribed schedule under the Housing Development Act. That could be G, H, I or J. All right. So basically Schedule G, Schedule H, Schedule I or Schedule J. This will normally indicated at the head of the agreement. So then you know what it is. So let me give you the difference. Schedule G and Schedule H is basically what we mean that the construction will be happening in relation to the building, right? Only after you sign, all right? Or during your signing or whatever that is. So this is the very common Schedule G. G for ground, basically is landed property. H for high-rise. So therefore, it's your stratified high-rise property. And then you have the Schedule I and Schedule J, which is very uncommon today. But these are what we call the build-then-sell, whereby the developer already done building it and therefore they are only selling it subsequent to the build, right? But it's very rare in the market. So let's focus on G and H. So the whole idea is that you must know what are you signing. Schedule G, Schedule H, Schedule I or Schedule J, right? Read the first few paragraph of the agreement so that you know that the who is the developer, and the developer got the necessary license, and the description of the land title is all in order. And then it's also important to also see that, you know, there is the ending part of the agreement that put in all the details of the party, details of the property that you are buying, how many car parks, for example, what is the price, and then check the schedule of payment. There's a third schedule to the Housing Development Act that actually talk about, you know, at what stage are you expected to pay. And why is it very important? And the percentage is because not everyone will get a 90% loan from their bank. If you are getting a 70% loan from their bank, you have to keep track of the timing for you to pay the subsequent 20%, which means 10% upon signing, another 10% upon subsequent completion, another 10% before the bank come in for the subsequent 70%. So I will repeat, read the first few paragraphs just to get the details of the development right. Read the schedule at the bank, especially on all the details of what you are buying and the party's details. Read the schedule of payment to understand your obligation. So that will be my advice to all aspiring first home buyer to buy under construction property from the housing developer.
Is this a standard format? I mean, is the format of which how is written governed by any act or law, or is it actually just a industry agreed upon way to prepare the S&P?
Okay, it's actually a statutory prescribed format, which means it's not within the industry, it's prescribed by the law. It's expected that all clause must not be adjusted. You have to adopt fully. And it's very important that this is applicable to Peninsula only. In the Sabah Sarawak context, they will have their different version of a similar thing. Then I want to also highlight that, you know, for all intent and purposes, developer is only allowed to make amendment with either the minister approval or those columns that allow for variation, which is like the details of the project, whoever the transacting party, you know, the payment number as in the amount being computed, but the percentage already be prescribed.
And this part is also something to highlight because it's also often the source of a lot of disputes after the buyer has collected their property, which is, you know, sometimes before you actually agreed to buy the property, there's promises of like, oh, you get a fridge, you get this brand inside your house, you get this facility. And then when it's delivered, it's not to the expectations. And a lot often, the SMP cited as kind of like the promise that like, oh, in the SMP, you wrote this. In the SMP, you offered this. But there's some degree of ambiguity there. What's your insight into this type of ambiguities in the SMP?
Okay, if I make it very clear for everyone who do this, is that, you know, when you sign a HDA agreement under the Housing Development Act, the prescribed GUHIJ, effectively you are buying a bare unit because there's no provision under the agreement, under the Act, that allowed for a furnished unit or whatever that's extra and over and above is actually regulated separately. So a separate document need to be in place and make sure that those things are spelled correctly and what kind of expectation are agreed between the parties.
Okay. That's very interesting. And where does this SMP come from? I mean, is it prepared? It's obviously prepared by the lawyers, but is this the lawyer that of which the buyer engages or the developer engages? Maybe you can explain a bit on that process.
Right, of course. What happened is that normally it's the developers who engage the lawyers and they have their panels of lawyers. And because it's a prescribed contract anyway under the law, so there will not be actually too much detriment to the purchaser anyway, right? So that would mean that developer normally prepare the SMP because they are using a standard contract under the law and just put in the details. So if you are the purchaser, all you need to do, you are free to hire your own lawyer, obviously, as a purchaser. But there will be separate fees payable. And for them to check whether it is actually a prescribed agreement or not, for them to even check all the details of your purchase are actually correctly and accurately reflected.
Okay, we're going to take a short break now for some messages and we'll be back with more. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're tuned in to The Property Show on The Morning Run. I'm Sim Wee Boon and with me here today is Lawyer Chris Tan, Managing Partner of Chir Associates. We've been taking a look at some of the more commonly used legal terms when it comes to buying your first home from a developer. So today's show is trying to help at least shed some light into these terms. Earlier in the show, we took a look at Letter of Intent to Purchase and the Sales and Purchase Agreement. Now I want to move on to another thing which during my journey buying my home, I was a bit not stumped, but I was like, oh, I didn't know about this, which is stamp duty. Let's start off with a very basic definition. What exactly is a stamp duty and why is there a need for it?
Okay, so stamp duty is something imposed by the LHDN, which is our Lembaga Hasil Dalam Negeri, which is our Inland Revenue Department, right? And it's actually to validate certain transaction. Basically, it is the government duty on transaction.
Okay.
It's a tax. Yeah.
Okay, it's a tax. So and from what I know is there is the amount that you have to pay for it is also regulated by law. The developer cannot simply charge the tax. Am I right to say that?
Yes, of course. Basically the tax there you have to understand because the law have to protect you with ownership, right? So when you do the stamp duty, normally it's a stamping on the document to make sure it's valid. Number two is that there is a stamp duty imposed on the what we call the memorandum of transfer, which is the change of ownership. So it is normally paid by the purchaser. So the whole idea by the purchaser is that to secure the interest of the purchaser because you pay good money for the property, you want the proper ownership transferred into your own name as a new purchaser. So hence, by paying this, you will recognize you reflected under the land registrar, land registry, and it will be reflected that the new owners will be who and who. And this is part of the government tax regime. And but in relation to the what is the stamp duty payable and all that, again, is prescribed under the law. As to, you know, normally, if I can just give you the consideration of market value of property, for example, is for the first 100,000 is 1%, subsequent 400,000 is 2%, and then the next 500,000 is 3%, and whatever after that is 4%. So the whole idea here is that, you know, there's a scale that you need to do to validate the transfer.
Okay, but There are cases where developers, I've seen in, you know, when these when developers are promoting the product, that they put there free stamp duty, no zero stamp duty. You know, does that imply that there is no cost to transaction for stamp duty, or is the developer bearing the stamp duty? I mean, what's the implication, or what's the implication that the developer is trying to say here?
Okay, I think anyone who's interested to buy from relation to this one, make it clear, there's actually two types of thing here we are talking about, right? If you talk about stamp duty, there could be, there's a stamping required of the sales and purchase agreement, right? The stamping for the sales and purchase agreement is so that it is valid and it can be admissible to the court later. So this is, again, a very, very nominal sum. But however, there come another one whereby when the title is issued and it's ready for transfer from the developer to the buyer, for example, there's a stamp duty that need to be paid. So the stamp duty is actually calculated based on the basis that I've mentioned just now. And this is where if you see that some of the promotion, they will say, not just no stamp duty, then they put there no MOT or no stamp duty for MOT, right? MOT means memorandum transfer, is actually for the stamping of the transfer. So when the developer is using words like this, they are basically saying to you is that this will be borne by them and they will pay for you as a buyer instead of asking you to pay, because the normal situation is whoever is the buyer need to pay for all this duty.
Okay, and just FYI, as a part of the current home ownership campaign, the stamp duty is waived by the government, right?
There are some incentive at the moment. So therefore, when you are going for the HOC, there are actually certain stamp duty that have been done. And currently what it is like if you're buying from the housing developer who have yet to deliver the property to you, basically you think about it, which means that the transfer ownership cannot happen, right? So it only happened a few years later. So what happened is that if you are buying under the HOC, get a cert from the developer that's issued by the relevant ministry, so that later when the title is out, probably a few years later, when you need to transfer the ownership to you, you can then submit it with the cert to say that the stamp duty is waived.
Okay, but can you do that even in a sense where you've bought properties previously? Say someone has bought a property a few years ago and now it's time for them to do the MOT, but they do not have the funds to do so. Is there any legal implication to say maybe I can't do it now, I only do it later when I can afford it? Because this sum, you know, this MOT sum is not a small amount of money compared to the initial stages.
Of course, nobody can force you to pay if you have no money and whatnot. But the thing is this, depending if you have, there is an ownership risk on your side, you have to understand that the title is not in your name. And if you are getting financing from conventional banking, they also expect you to do that, because it's only when the title is in your name, then the title can be charged to the bank properly so that their loan to you is secure.
I want to move on to this part that comes after the property is done. Vacant possession. So what exactly is vacant possession?
Vacant possession. Okay, when people use the word vacant possession, it means this is a delivery of the unit, you know, empty to you. That's why the word vacant. Of course, consistent with that, there is another term called legal possession. Legal possession means legally it's yours, but you have not taken physical delivery yet in relation to that. So a vacant possession basically is the delivery of an empty unit to you in relation to vacant possession delivered by the developer. Normally, the developer have 24 months or 36 months, depending whether it's a landed or a high-rise that you're buying, from the date of the agreement to deliver the vacant possession of the unit to you if it's under construction. So for all intent and purposes, vacant possession simply means taking of key.
Okay. So how does a late delivery process work then? The SMP has stated the timeline of which that the property that you've bought should be completed. And what happens, say, if they are 6 months late? In between that, what can the purchaser do? Where can they go? Who can they talk to seek some clarification and maybe take some action on this?
Okay, actually, the whole idea about late delivery and all that is there's actually a lot of stakeholder here. I would say that you can obviously check with the developer to find out the progress. Number two, you can also refer your concern to the Ministry of Housing if it's under the Housing Developer Act. And of course, your interests would also not that compromised if the progress is not done, like I said just now, the payment by the bank or your payment is not forthcoming as well. So they will need to do that as soon as possible because of the liability of the late payment, late delivery interest, as well as the fact that, you know, will impact on their cash flow if they don't do it within the prescribed time. So I would say that, you know, what people need to do is generally check out the progress and find out what happened. But I must say that, you know, the Housing Developer Act in Malaysia, as well as the prescribed agreement under the Act, is very much a pro-homeowner regime. So this is almost like a consumer protection, whereby property developer or real estate developers are actually a regulated profession, so they will not take it very lightly.
Okay. Well, lastly, just want to check, want to get your thoughts. Any other relevant and important legal terms that a first-time home buyer should know when buying their property from a developer?
I think it's important to, if it's a first-time home buyer, when they need to buy a property and whatnot, you must know that, you know, the developer is properly licensed, and therefore, when you read the first paragraph of the first two, three paragraph of the agreement, there will be information in relation to that. And if you have information in relation to that, if you are not really sure and you have concern and you have your suspicious about that, I think you can actually call up the Ministry of Housing and then check with them whether those numbers are correct and whether they are properly licensed developer. The whole idea here is this. I think the agreement, the entire buying property under construction from housing developer is regulated, as I mentioned, over and over again. Therefore, there are many, many stakeholders to do this. And then the other thing is that, you know, if you're getting a loan from the bank would also be responsible in doing some due diligence for you. And if they are not proper, the bank will not even loan the housing loan to you as a buyer to buy. So like I said, it's multiple stakeholder, multiple interests tied together. That's why generally it's quite safe. But even then, home buyer need to be beware and look at those details and take those details seriously.
Okay, thank you for the advice. And that's all the time for today's property show. Thank you for being on the show, Chris. That was Chris Tan, Managing Partner of Chur Associates. If you would like to get a personal finance aspect from buying your first home, you can check out BFM's Ringgit & Sense show hosted by my colleague Roshan Karnison. And with that, you've been listening to The Property Show. I'm Sim Wee Boon, signing off for The Morning Run. We have the 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up next, followed by Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
The Property Show on BFM 89.9, The Business Station. Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.